is Ranger Kidwell Ross, editor at worldsweeper.com, and I have the pleasure today to once again speak with John Miola, safety manager for Transfield Services Transportation Infrastructure. He's located in Richmond, Virginia. And then, first off, welcome, John.
Thank you.
John, I know that you'll be giving a seminar on work zone safety at the American Public Works Association Annual Congress upcoming next week, and that title is Applied Risk Management Techniques for Improving Highway Work Zone Safety, and that's certainly something that all of our street sweeping folks are going to want to know more about. So you are so kind to have offered to provide an overview of your seminar to the people that aren't able to attend it at APWA, so I'm just going to say take it away and give us your usual capable outline of what we need to know.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be able to address the group. You know, our mantra here includes, you know, if we know something or if we've learned something for safety, for efficiency, well, we want to share it. And by extension, you know, this is probably, what, the third or fourth year? This is my fourth year at APWA, and I think the third year running for World Sweeper. So it is a pleasure to be able to share, you know, what knowledge we've learned. Specifically in this case, and you can kind of look at it from a couple of different perspectives, that title, Applied Risk Management. Well, applied, you know, risk management normally is not associated with highway work zones. Or you know, there's usually a dichotomy because the folks that work on the road, you know, risk management is usually something that comes from a ivory tower office. Well, we've studied this stuff for, you know, many years, and we think we've refined it down to a few key concepts that do apply in work zones. They're risk management concepts that if leadership and, you know, senior management, executive management begins to adopt and enforces these through an organization and kind of makes the, you know, the key attributes, leadership, motivation, employee recognition, if you kind of start to establish those in your organization, translating them into an actual work zone setting, it's normally not done, but in our case, we have to do it because we, you know, most of our workforce is on the ground, boots on the ground, and we're running sweepers and vacuum trucks, and we're patching potholes, and we're following up with contractors, and we've got a huge investment in sweeping infrastructure. Whether we do it self-performance or we're hiring, probably some of your members are, you know, working for us between Florida, Texas, Alaska, Virginia, Washington, D.C., and a few points in between. So it does apply, and if we just run through the presentation, I can give you a little bit of a thumbnail. The first thing is the actual dynamic of the work zone. If you're going to study your risk, if you're going to know your risk, you really, you know, it behooves us to kind of study it and know what the factors are. Well, the factors are, you know, fairly straightforward, but they're critical to understand. Number one, there are a lot of distracted drivers, and cell phones and tweets and Twitters and all of that electronic gadgetry, not to mention billboards even. There was an article in the New York Times a couple of months ago on the growing predominance of that electronic billboard effect, where these things are in your face at key intersections and on major roadways. Well, that's a distraction. That's a driver that's not paying attention, looking at the highway. So knowing these factors are going to be, now it translates real simple. If you know you're going to be sweeping in and around a busy urban intersection, you know, hopefully it's going to be at night or when traffic is at lower volume, but those are factors you need to consider. What is an errant driver going to run up on? How well protected is my backside? How many TMAs? Do I have law enforcement protecting me? And more importantly, if there are boots on the ground. Now, this is when you stop the sweeper to clear a jam or you're, you know, tanking up from a hydrant. There's boots on the ground. Well, the, you know, the statistics that we study, and again, you know, attribute of risk management, know your risk. The overall highway fatalities, they're trending down. So that's a good thing for a lot of different reasons. Seatbelt enforcement and drunk driving laws and safer vehicles and for a lot of reasons, the overall fatalities. But within that group, There is actually a category that the DOT calls unprotected highway users. And that category includes pedestrians, motorcyclists, bicyclists, and the last group is highway workers. So if boots are on the ground, the fatality rate and the accident rate for that category is going up. And you know, there's a relational value if you think back. Well, we got distracted drivers, we've got boots on the ground, we've got proximity. So, you know, the mix is, like, volatile. So it behooves us to understand, you know, where we are, what we're doing, how we're doing it. We just had, for example, we were working down in Jacksonville, Florida. Our guys were off the highway on a sidewalk. They had stacked the cones. They had done a lane closure, taken it up, put the cones on the sidewalk. A driver, because of a traffic backup, rather than have a rear-end crash, he jumped the sidewalk and traveled for 26 feet in a Ford F-150 and clipped two of our guys. Now, they weren't seriously hurt. They were more bumped than hurt, but it just illustrates the point. So protection by location. The other point I have on that slide for the dynamic is the annual Work Zone Safety Week, which is very, very prominently featured in the anyone who works on a highway had better be paying attention to that week. We make a great deal of it here. We make a great show of it. We give gifts. We have events. We have speakers. We have contests to try and reinforce that message. Because that message has to stay with our workers all year long, and we reinforce it continually. So very important point. It kicks off in April of every year, kind of puts the message out there, but you can't let it recede. You can't let it go away as, gee, we had a nice time at the picnic, and I got a, you know, a flashlight or a watch. Well, that's got to be reinforced all year to maintain that that awareness. Work zone safety dynamic, a little bit different from the traffic side. The safety dynamic, advance warning signage. And in some cases, if it's a big project or a prolonged event, programmable message boards, overhead message boards are becoming very commonly installed on major arterial and urban roadways, because to get that information out, you're giving at least a clue to oncoming drivers. So advance warning for that work zone, especially at night. And you know, you put it up, say sweeping taking place between the hours of, be alert. The persons on the ground setting out the traffic control devices, obviously most at risk. We really can't enforce, you know, speed reductions through a sweeping work zone, because it's just impractical from several standpoints. Employee motivation, key concept in this whole risk management factor, that it really stays under the radar. Nobody, you know, people talk about risk management, insurance and safety and compliance. Well, you got to go to the next step to really get some achievement of the longer-term goals. You need to motivate your employee so that when no one's around, they're going to make the right decision. When there's no direction and no on-screen supervision, there's nobody right there, that person needs to know, what would my boss want me to do in this case? What would be the safest thing I could do? Because they do have to make those decisions, whether it's stepping out of the truck, stepping out in traffic, whether it's pulling something out of the road or cleaning a jam on the machine. Do I shut it down like I'm supposed to, or can I hit it with a broom handle? And I can tell you, we've had some close calls in that respect. So motivation, how to get people to think and act conscientiously in the absence of, you know, a supervisor standing there, very key point. And that goes back to what we said, Work Zone Safety Week, an event that's memorable, some kind of a tangible reminder. And we use everything from pocket protectors to we give out, you know, belt clips that carry the safety message, tools, we're really big on tools, I mean anything, tape measures, flashlights, a tangible object that stays with that person, you would be amazed at the, you know, downstream effect of that. Let's say, for example, 1 year we did key tags, a really cool-looking little key tag that most people, you know, would say, well, that's kind of dorky, a key tag. Well, I got news for you. If you put the right message on that key tag, you always know where your keys are. Think of how often we reach for our keys and we look at that. That's the reminder. And yeah, it's a small piece of the pie, but that's motivation. The only word that we can follow it up with on motivation is that there was an early psychologist named Abraham Maslow, and he wrote what's called a hierarchy of needs, human needs, and that's kind of become one of the biblical concepts in the safety field for just legendary over the course of industrial history. Safety is a basic primary human need, and extrapolates from, primitive days when people were living in caves. Well, safety was you didn't get eaten by a bear. Well, now it's safety on our job, and we need to make sure that our organization reflects that concern to demonstrate to employees that, look, we care about your safety. We want you to do the right thing. We're going to back you up. We're going to give you equipment, training, whatever it takes. But we need, at the end of the day, we need you making that right decision to follow that. So it is a basic human need that we're addressing, and you can take it to the next step with training. Obviously, training is very important for equipment operators, sweeper operators, even running a dump trailer or a pickup truck, towing a message board. Very critical concept that person understands not only the technical aspects, but how things can change in midstream. And we run into this very, very commonly. You get out there, the best planned exercises come up with new elements and say, well, what do we do now? Well, there's got to be some decisions made. Switch back to what we said on motivation. The employee needs to know to make the most conservative, protective decision based on their behalf, the organization, the customer, the client, the traveling public, obviously. And these things take the place of, if I put out this sign, well, let's take a look at it in daylight. Well, that sign looks fine in daylight. How about at night? Well, or every little blemish or smirch on that sign is going to be detracting from the readability. So you've got some, visual factors. Well, an employee's got to look at that and again, make a conservative decision to, say, look, we need new signs, or we got to clean these up, or... Another part of the program that we preach very heavily, we consistently preach this, are just the basic defensive driving skills. And most people say, well, these guys drive, they got CDLs, they've got, operator qualifications. Well, I can tell you, we drive on interstates, and we stop on interstates. So defensive driving to us is like a life safety skill. It is more than just your average, follow the rules of the road kind of thing. Awareness, knowledge of the, key characteristics such as like around intersections. Intersections are among the most dangerous places a driver can be. Intersections includes parking lots, includes the 7-Eleven, includes anywhere vehicles are going to stop and turn or change direction or slow down and look for directions or make a decision to get off a ramp. Even a clover leaf is an intersection. So we really preach very, very heavily the five keys of defensive driving, for example, using the commercial Smith system. And when you extrapolate that to work zones, if you don't preach defensive driving, you're not even going to get to the work zone. You're going to be tied up with a fender bender even before you get there. So very key concept that we use for defensive upstream. A little bit of the technical, and this goes back to our applied risk management. There are four or five key parties out there that are really doing some stand-up work in protecting work zones, one of which is NIOSH. NIOSH is the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. It's kind of like the research arm of OSHA. And the thing to remember is that when it comes to work zones, there's not a lot of technical regulatory safety that applies. I mean, yes, there's DOT and there's the Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices. There are state highway traffic plans. But they really do not talk about boots on the ground. That's an occupational setting. Well, most people would say, well, that's OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health. Well, you're right. If you read volumes of OSHA, you will not find much language oriented toward a person on the ground in a traffic situation. Now, OSHA does have a 10-hour highway work zone course that's a very well put together, but there's no regulatory science involved. There's no regulatory compliance aspect. So that's all available, the NIOSH information, which they're doing internal work zone traffic control planning and also blindside backing. And that's something that everyone that runs a sweeper knows how dangerous that maneuver can be. It behooves you to go check their website, NIOSH.gov. You can also reach it through the OSHA.gov site. And to show you that the diverse parties getting involved, ANSI, American National Standards Institute, has a highway work zone safety standard published. It's A10.47 is their technical code for it, and that specifies the, you know, best practices, so to speak. And I can tell you it goes beyond many of the regulatory standards such as DOT and OSHA. But NIOSH, ANSI, OSHA, very important. Here's a website that should be a bookmarked icon on any traffic manager's desk, any engineer or maintenance planner or the sweeping supervisor. It's www.workzonesafety, one word, workzonesafety.org. And that is hosted by the good folks at Texas A&M University. That site has it all. And I can't preach that site enough. Very, very important. A lot of good information. And you will find specific sites and references there for sweeping, for patching potholes, for just about any operation that's going to go on. And I can't promote that site enough. Incident management, if there is an incident, folks have to, and I don't care if it's a flat tire or breakdown or you lose a wheel or you throw a sprocket off a chain and your truck is broken down half in the lane, that's an incident. Okay, the way that is managed, you need to remember all engines stopped, and the critical point at that time becomes upstream warning. You need to have that truck equipped with some flares or some triangles or some cones or a shadow truck. Somebody's got to be upstream at a sufficient distance protecting that scene, because now you've shifted from a work operation. You've got an incident on your hands, whether it's a fender bender or whatever. And the incident itself, this is axiomatic in the industry, the incident itself is nothing more than a fender bender or a flat tire or whatever. It's the secondary incidents, oncoming traffic, and we've learned this the hard way, absolutely critical to get some upstream warning, especially if you're working through a curve, an intersection, where you've got impaired line of sight. Somebody needs to get upstream really quickly and give some warning to oncoming motorists. Otherwise, that crash, that's the one with no skid marks. Why would they stop? They don't see any reason. They just come blowing and going while you're there. So very, very critical that we... Now, this process is made a little bit easier because we've got these things now called cell phones and, you know, wireless devices and the two-way Nextels and all of the different little communication devices that supervisors can keep in touch. You know, if Jethro has a breakdown, well, we need somebody out there backing him up, protecting that truck. Now, obviously, you've got your strobes, you've got your warning lights. If it's a nighttime operation, I can tell you impaired drivers after midnight are more prevalent, and by impaired, it's the, you know, euphemism for DUI. So be absolutely critically certain that you've got some means of protecting that vehicle in a compromised traffic situation. A little bit on risk management. We use what's called a job hazard analysis. And as I say, you know, we've really drilled this down to the nitty-gritty details. Job hazard analysis is nothing more than a step-by-step breakdown. Who does what when in this job? And most people would say, well, you just run that truck out there and you lower that broom and start blowing and going. Well, you know, we tend to take a little more, again, you know, risk management. You take a little more of an engineering viewpoint and say, well, you know, how, let's model through this. How exactly are we going to do it? And this is on paper now, in the office, in the project, before the folks go out, and you kind of work through. Are we going to have police following us for protection? Are we going to, where are our signs going to be? You know, are our lights checked? Are we going to inspect that vehicle? It's specific assignments. Who does what when? And if there's a change, that has to be noted. if there's got to be, you know, you can't get out there and say, well, we did the JHA, but this wasn't on it, therefore, well, what do we do? Well, that's a decision tree kind of thing where some, you know, adjunctive action has to be taken to accommodate for the change. Drains overflowing, my brooms are, you know, hung up, or I've got a pallet stuck in the hopper, or I've got a change in the program. What's the default procedure? There's a backup truck. There's, you know, pull off to the side. There's a safe area up here. You model through it, and you at least try to get your major risk factors identified, controlled, personal protective equipment, high visibility apparel, you know, backup plans for getting some help on the scene. Those kinds of things are all part of a JHA. Very important step. A lot of companies kind of use pieces of it. Traffic control planning is on the JHA. Where you're going to pull up to that hydrant, it's on the JHA. Do you have the right tools? Do you have your meter? How much does that meter weigh? Do you need help putting that meter on that hydrant? You know, those are some of the issues. And you say, well, we've been doing this for a long time. Well, okay, granted. And you've probably been doing it well, which means, you know, you've got a good work ethic and a good safety practice. I guarantee you, if you start examining it point for point, there are improvements that can be made all along the line. And that's the role of management in your risk management portfolio to say, here are the improvements we are looking at. And these don't happen overnight. They take, you know, weeks or months. You bring in your suppliers. You bring in your vendors. There's new hardware out there. Let's say, for example, you hire, you know, the guy that was driving the truck in the beginning, he was 6 feet, 4 inches tall. Well, now you've got somebody else who's maybe 5'5". Well, you know right then that you need to add a step, a little cable loop step, for that person to maintain three-point stance, getting up and on, in and out of the cab or off the back of the hopper. You need to accommodate. Well, that's something that would be part of your JHA for access, climbing on and off the trucks for adjustment, for maintenance, for emptying, for, you know, just general operations. Somebody needs to be out with either a tape measure or actually looking, are the handholds sufficient? Can we weld a handhold on? Can we bolt on a handle to make it easier for the driver to accommodate to climbing around this thing? Next point we want to talk about, very important, high-visibility apparel. High-visibility apparel is the single most important protective device when that person's out of the vehicle. When they're in the vehicle is the most important protective device. And it's usually a big vehicle, so you've got a lot of protection. When that person's on the ground, all bets are off. The four most dangerous words that we never want to hear, I never saw them. And I can tell you the worst accidents are usually have those words somewhere in their description. You need to make sure that that employee has on high-visibility apparel, minimum of a Class 2 upper body. When we do night work, Class 3 upper body, and we use Class E. These are ANSI designations. They have a standard for that. Class E, which is full body, whether it's a jumpsuit, whether it's pants you pull on, whether it's bloomer shorts you pull on, whether it's ankle bracelets, knee bands, something to give added visibility at night. Very critical point we cannot stress enough when the boots are actually on the ground. Very, very important, and you should have a vendor. If you're buying this stuff out of a catalog, you know, you got to make sure at least it's ANSI rated. The best approach is to have a vendor that you're buying your safety gear from that's an actual real-life person, and you pump them and say, listen, if somebody invents a new one tomorrow, I need to see it, whether it's jackets in the winter or a breathable fabric or mesh fabric or any configuration thereof, decals on hard hats, reflective striping on the rear-facing surfaces of the vehicle, all of the above. You can't do enough to enhance visibility. Making sure the strobes are visible. This is a famous, you know, famous situation where the 10-wheel dump trucks will pull up on a paving site. They've all got strobes on them, but the strobes are on the cab roof. Well, the dump hopper blocks the strobe. Now you don't even see it unless you're coming from the other direction. You need to see it from rear-facing. So evaluate your fleets to make sure you've got that rear-facing illumination. Night work we talked about a little bit, but I can tell you employee fatigue factors, especially in warmer weather when dehydration becomes a problem. Dehydration can affect fatigue very, very pronounced. So making sure workers stay hydrated. We even make recommendations on, you know, diet. If somebody's eating cheeseburgers and french fries for lunch or for their midnight snack, well, that stuff is awful on the body to digest. So you're actually putting a load on the body eating that junk food as opposed to lighter foods such as salads, fruits, vegetables, you know, lighter grade where you don't have that high fat caloric intake. Very important to remember one last point, Saturdays. Statistically, Saturday is the most dangerous day of the week, and obviously Saturday night into Sunday morning when the bar is let out, very, very much heightened risk factors. Saturday, for a lot of different demographic reasons, very, very critical that if you can avoid driving on a Saturday, avoid it. If you can minimize it, go early, stay late, but try to stay out of traffic on Saturday. And if you have to, then all the antennas have to be deployed for maximum awareness. These are critical factors to be aware of. You know, the day, the time, the week, the month, when, you know, seasonal factors, all of that can be part of your JHA, for example, should be discussed at safety meetings. Just the fact that you've discussed it implants it in your employees' memory banks, kind of encourages, reinforces, again, that motivation and leadership. That's pretty much the summary on the presentation that's going to APWA, and I hope we've managed to get some of those key points across. Motivation, leadership from top levels. Everybody, and this is, again, I'll give you an example. Everybody says, listen, work safe. Be careful. Don't have accidents. You know, do a good job. Be careful. Have a safe trip. Well, that's great. But, I mean, that's kind of like wallpaper. The nitty-gritty is getting down into the details of how we work safe and how we will drive safely and how we will have a safe trip. Well, you know, just given the chin music to say, you know, work safe, be careful, do a good job, don't have accidents, well, that's great. But it's the actual technical details. I mean, and I get labeled as a geek sometimes for going around telling people, say, listen, you're going on that trip, have a good, safe trip. Listen, by the way, remember, everybody in that vehicle needs a seatbelt, and the best defensive measure you can make is to burn your headlights, daytime running lights at all times, and the number one is to leave enough room between you and the vehicle ahead. Now, you try preaching that and get the look, some people look back at you. Well, I got to tell you, they're going to remember that stuff because they're on a trip, and if their job is not driving every day or all day or driving in compromised traffic, those points can make a big difference. So, you know, saying, yeah, have a safe trip, that's one thing, but telling people, leave a lot of room between you and the guy ahead of you, well, that's going to implant in somebody's memory. And hopefully they do, because it is actually the leading class of accidents is rear-end collision. So by telling people that, yeah, they might think you're a little geeky, but they're probably going to say thanks to themselves somewhere along the way. You want to be the recipient of that because it's your crew on the ground. So that's the kind of memory implantation. That, in a nutshell, is applied risk management for work zone safety. So, listen, thanks
well,
so
well,
much.
Well, John, let me...
the opportunity to address. Yes, sir.
Let me come into this here a minute and tell you something that I think really stuck out on what you said, and I'd just like to emphasize it a little further. One of the things you said was to let the people on the job know, if there's not a management person there, what kind of decision-making they should make. And you used a real big word in that, and that was conservative.
Conservative.
And I think what strikes out to me there is that the employees, what they want to do is, oh, yeah, they want to be safe, and that's that chin music that you talked about and so forth. But at the same time, they want to know that their butt is covered. Mm-hmm. And if the management makes it clear that in items of safety, of workplace safety, their butt will be covered if they make a conservative decision to whether that means shut down the machine or you know, whatever it means that, that might cost the company money, that they're going to be backed up because that's a conservative decision in a safety-related situation. And again, that's so important on your paperwork and your training to let them know what should happen at each juncture. But if it's not there, if they find something that, you know, they don't recall what they're supposed to do or it wasn't written down for them, to know that they'll be backed up if they make a conservative decision.
Absolutely correct. That is absolutely the crystallization of that thought, and which is why we say, going back to that JHA, and to show you the level of detail this goes down to, this is very common, and I hate to use the example, the oil and gas industry and the chemical industry, they use what's called a process safety management standard that requires that there be a very detailed plan, you know, because they're working in chemicals and refineries and very dangerous environments. Well, in that plan, that process safety management, PSM standard, there is a category for what's called change management. And it's kind of like, okay, you engineered that plan as carefully as you could. Well, what's going to happen when you get out there on the job and something changes? What's your plan now? And for the example you just cited, it could be as simple as, hey, listen, you park that rig and call me. I don't care if it's 3 o'clock in the morning. You make my phone ring. What I don't want you to do is to take a shortcut, try to take a chance, try to push it, burn up a motor, you know, throw a fan belt or overheat or get exposed in traffic. And that is exactly the conservatism that has to be ingrained because, you know, when an employee does it, you've got a judgment-making situation. Well, you know, a lot of employees take it upon themselves, I want to please the boss. I want to, you know, reflect the goals of my organization.
Absolutely.
We did 12 miles last night. I've only done 7 tonight, but I'm going to push it. Well, we don't want that happening. We're not going to measure you according to those goals. We're going to measure you according to how safely, how problem-free, how well we did, but we're not going to hold the sword over someone when it comes to safety. So, and you know, there's a whole scale of relational values in between, obviously, that can make that conservative decision. You can still get a job done. You just don't push it as fast or as hard. But, yeah, that was a key concept. I'm glad you picked up on that.
Well, and there's certainly lots of key concepts in your talk. And, boy, I'll tell you, talk about action-packed and information-packed seminar. That,
well, I'm going to send you a copy, and you can post it if you like. We share this information. It's in the safety business. If you know something, like I've written, you know, the handbooks and the articles. I just got an article published in Roads and Bridges in their supplement, the safety supplement. If you know something that can affect the person's safety, that can contribute to it, well, if you don't share it, then you're not doing your job. So yes, I mean, we want this information out there. You know, the life you save may be my own kind of thing, but yeah, for a lot of different reasons. But our industry, I can tell you, anyone who works in the public sector in that highway, you are imperiled by, I mean, everything from, you know, car commercials to tire commercials to, think about the tire commercial where they show the guy swerving to avoid the squirrel. A squirrel, I mean, one step up from a rat, and,
yeah,
and they show this guy doing this, you know, Indianapolis 500 maneuver to avoid this squirrel. Well, what's the message to the boneheads out there that buy these tires? It's scary. It's like they're going to try to do the same thing. Well, we know that when you swerve at speed to avoid something in the road, you've just put yourself at enormous risk of, you know, oncoming lane incursion, run off the road, overcorrection, fixed objects. I mean, there is just an enormous exposure that's what we're up against. So for a lot of reasons, yes, we need to preach this and really disseminate and at least know what our risk factors are. You know, asking the question is usually, you know, part of the solution.
Well, thank you very much. We've been speaking with John Miola, Safety Manager for Transfield Services Transportation Infrastructure. And John is a nationally, internationally known expert on work zone safety, and we couldn't be more pleased with the information you always provide us with, John. So Thanks again.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thank you, Ranger.